Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You are. And today we're going to talk about simply living, or the best things in life aren't things, which is a cute quote from Art Buchwald. And I want to welcome our guests here, Lynn Stan and Chuck Lind. That can almost go together, right? Chuck Lind Stan. So anyway, and I'm assuming that you're representing the organization Simply Living, which is a Central Ohio organization. I assume the name came from the quote from Gandhi about live simply so others can simply live. Am I right in that?
You are.
Okay, good. It's always good to start off with me being right.
I'm going to pinch him. He is being too ornery. So maybe Chuck, you could just share briefly about what is exactly the mission of Simply Living. And then Lynn, I'd like to hear what you think the mission of Simply Living is.
Okay.
And we'll see if they agree.
Yeah. Right? Well, they don't have to agree. That's one of the beauties of Simply Living. But anyway, Chuck, take it away.
That's right. We probably won't agree, but I was one of the founding board members in 1992. So that's 28 years ago. And a lot of evolution has happened. I think the original idea was all about lifestyle changes. So the choices we make are more in tune with the potential environmental impacts. So that's still largely true. I think we've evolved over the years to be, I know we've used the phrase recently, community education for sustainable living. And so we've kind of been a bit more emphasis on community as well as lifestyle. We understand that changing the light bulbs to LEDs and, doing the typical kinds of things that we can do immediately are not enough by themselves. We need policy changes, and people remind Simply Livers of that very often. It's not just about your lifestyle choice. It's about building the community. And there are many now bottom-up movements that are kind of, I think, validate the sustainability emphasis that we've had all along, and the importance of paying attention to all the little dots that affect sustainability. So it's not just the amount of electricity you use. It is about the food we eat and the implications for the environment for the food we eat, transit, how we get around. All of those things affect, recycling, and even the economy are all ways in which we can implement the mission of Simply Living. Pretty broad, okay, but that's me.
Well, Lynn, could you refute that socialist statement there for us?
No, not at all. I just say we're into three generations almost after Earth Day started. And I feel that it's even more so important. But I also feel that there are some people who have just not really thought that all the thinking that they were doing was good to keep up, so they kind of accepted it not to be followed. And I think we see that all the time in our big policies, the big picture. I think we have the people on the ground who really want change, but don't know how to kind of, as the book says, go for the grass tops. How do the grass tops and the grass roots meet? And that is a book. Chuck, who wrote it?
The Grassroots Rising is a book by, I'll think of it shortly.
But here I am. I married into the generation of people that were doing Simply Living. My husband, Charlie Einhorn, was older. So it always felt really good because he was doing what I really wanted to be doing and had been learning to do. But then I think we all find in our own society that we kind of have to keep apologizing why, we're pushing for this good, that bad good. And that part I find is really the goal now for Simply Living. How do we just show everybody, don't feel guilty if you're trying to buy less. Don't feel guilty if you're holding people responsible for the trash they bring to the earth and all those types of things. We don't have to, you know, so I feel like we have to give ourselves permission to keep going and also give permission to say, we really do speak with our dollars. And can we all be speaking more and direct that connection?
So in the years that Simply Living has been around, I assume that there have been a number of things that, from your perspective, have improved from a society level, and a number of things that probably have, gone backwards or regressed. Chuck, do you have any sense of, I mean, does anything stick out in your mind that you just say, oh, we're so much better at this, but we're also so much worse at that?
I would say one that comes to my mind is we used to have co-ops and that type of stuff to have some healthier food choices. But now you don't have to just go to a co-op. You go to a co-op for other reasons, but you can find some good, healthy choices in a lot of other places. So we had a food co-op in the Near East Side. Quite honestly, it's a good business example of it started for the wrong reason based on the wrong assumptions. And as a business model, it didn't work. Okay. In the neighborhood, talk about location, location. But along the way, there was educating about people and people were showing, I am doing this. I'm just getting my food elsewhere. So I think that there have been a lot of things that have improved, but I also feel that, and that is a good thing, I believe, that if we don't want people to have to go out of their way to find those certain things, they should be finding them in every product they pick up. And even something simple like when you try to buy laundry detergent, why do you have to choose so hard on the packaging? There's so little choices. Sure. That was yesterday's dilemma. I don't want all that plastic. But so I feel like there have been a lot of successes. Local Matters is a great example of something that is successful. I was not around when it was part of Simply Living, but it's a good thing when it's a good example of showing when you're having a conversation and trying to come up with a solution that the Simply Living help them take that, and then they've spin off into their own, because we are a fiscal agent also, where we can help individuals take their ideas, and then if they're strong and it's going to continue, they spin off into their own nonprofit.
Well, it sounds like, and I tend to agree. I mean, my perception is the same, that there are a lot of alternatives out there if you want to live in a healthy way and be less impactful, but you have to kind of seek them out. And I think it is a bit of a class thing as well, where if you have the money and the resources, you can live in a simple way, you know, which is kind of weird. It's that thing about how expensive it is to live simply, you know? So for the vast culture, they're still thinking that 20 McNuggets is a great deal.
Yeah. They're lined up like crazy at McDonald's. It's amazing to drive by there. Well, one of the things that I was thinking about is that one of the things that hasn't changed is we have not been good at marketing sustainability. We haven't laid down a template over everything that we do, although you're talking a little bit about that, Lynn, to say, how do we take every aspect of our life and make it sustainable in some way, the best way we can? And we often don't think about it that way because we haven't created a marketing campaign that talks about the positive reasons why we want to live sustainably. The main thing about sustainability is there's sacrifice, there's hardship. And people are shocked when they come here and they want to know, what did we have to give up to live this way? And we think it's hysterically funny because we feel like this is the best life we've ever had. And we have lived a big life, you know, in different parts of the world with everything you could possibly want. But this is it. This is the simplicity, the resiliency, the happiness factor, all of that stuff. So that brings me to this question. Mm-hmm. Where do we start a conversation about real sustainable living versus the home and garden show kind of variety being green in some format? Where does that conversation begin? Chuck, you have an idea about that?
I kind of renamed our virtual conversations, real conversations with real people, and trying to go a little bit deeper. I think when we started, the word sustainability was, you know, not really readily used. And I remember back in the late 90s when, I forget exactly when the Sustainable Worthington group started up, and they got the word sustainability in the city charter in Worthington, a big event. And that's become really commonplace. But understanding at a more realistic level, and communicating the positive aspects. I think one of the things I was thinking about when you were speaking earlier is the problem over the last 30 years. The corporate world has just gone, you know, has taken over the markets, communications, all of the retail, the food economy, the global corporate consumer economy has flourished and in a way succeeded, in the sense that things are just so convenient. It's hard to have a conversation about really simplifying when just the name Simply Living triggers in people the thoughts of, hey, my life is not simple. I don't know how to get there. And, you know, starting that conversation to go deeper, very important. And I think it's kind of the difference between ecology, yeah, good idea, the interaction with humans and animals and plants, earth, but then deep ecology is kind of the looking at it at a level where we really have to be serious about how humans fit into the larger earth and with each other. And I think we've been so atomized and so brainwashed, if you will, by the commercialism, that has been something that's unique about Simply Living, I think, is that we've always been critical of the constant stream of advertising and the shop till you drop philosophy. And without, you know, we're not a spiritual organization per se, but spiritual values and values of authentic communication and digging deeper into the kind of themes that the Compassionate Communication Center of Ohio delves into, you know, being authentic in relationship to our communications, but also with the planet.
I agree, and I would add on to it that it's really also just treating people as people, and maybe it becomes more the economics of happiness thinking. I'm doing census, and I am in my neighborhood doing the census taking, and I came to a couple different senior homes, and I was really appalled at the fact that they're not allowed to grow something in their little, you know, in these little spaces. You know, they're not even encouraged to be green or encouraged to make their own facility be more what they want it to be. So, of course, it's a lot of grass and a couple bushes, but mostly nothing. And I was like, oh, how awful. If they could just be growing, there's these people who sit there because they don't have transportation. So it just really saddened me that the company that it's all subsidized housing, it's all about that profit, not what really, they get money based on a mission, but they're not responsible to really bring that mission into any other kind of action other than providing a space for people to live. And I find that attitude, and just like the Black Lives Matter, senior lives matter. Don't just warehouse them. In all green space, we have this love of grass, and I'm talking about the green grass, not the weed and the marijuana. That could be a good thing that people should really more love.
But that could be appealing to the seniors as well.
So. It absolutely, but the grass takes a lot of maintenance.
Sure.
It takes a lot of water. It takes a lot of maintenance, and they think that's good. But just think if they take some of those dollars and truly use them in different ways, again, on the economics of happiness, because it will be a little greener, it will be a little prettier, and perhaps it would also feed people.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break right here to remind you that you're listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you once again, it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Yes, thank God. And we're joined today with Lynn Stan and Chuck Lynn from Simply Living in Central Ohio. So, Annie, you had a question?
Well, I wanted to say a couple things about the economics of happiness. And one thing I will say, Simply Living did a really great job with the help of our dear friend Carol Fisher, who is no longer with us, to bring the documentary, The Economics of Happiness, to Central Ohio several years ago and create a conversation. And that really had a profound impact on me in a lot of ways, particularly from the woman that is the producer and the director, and I don't know what all she did in the film, but Helen Norberg, I can't think of her other name.
Anyway. Hodge.
Oh, Hodge, yes. I actually, you know, I'm not very big on heroes, but I met her over at Yellow Springs once, and I was like a little kid, and I said, could I have my picture with you? And I was so thrilled just to stand next to her because she is so great. But anyway, to talk about the economics of happiness, and that really, we realized at that time that that was the basis of our business model. And what the economics of happiness is really about is saying it's all about local. It's all about looking at every aspect of your life and how you work at your best to be sustainable. And I just wanted to share a little bit. I know you're two are supposed to be doing all the talking, but I wanted to share a little bit about how we have been connected as a business to an organization like Simply Living, with Simply Living, because people may not understand the impact they can have with a variety of resources. So when we first came to Ohio in 2004, we were looking for groups that we could connect with because we were really alone. And we found two. We found some organic farmers, and then we found Simply Living. And we said, look, we don't really have any money, but could we just exchange connections? And Marilyn Welker was the director at the time, and she said, oh, that would be great. And that began a conversation and a relationship that we were able to offer consulting at different levels, particularly when Simply Living was trying to get the radio station going. We did a lot of help on that project in the background. We created classes that we taught before there was a Sustainable You, which is a program of Simply Living, that we partnered with, and we shared some of the revenue. We offered tours, and people came here from Simply Living, and we had great conversations about the future and sustainability. And I was the first person, this is a big deal, I was the first person to get the Carol Fisher Community Engagement Award. And I actually refused at the beginning because I didn't think I could quite live up to the likes of Carol Fisher. But I was convinced that if I didn't take it, I would look bad. So my Baptist upbringing made me give in.
Well deserved.
Thank you. Okay.
She was fishing for that, Chuck. She was fishing.
But what I'm getting at is we've used, and we've also given money, and we've shown up when there were issues, and we've shown up when you needed us to say something on your behalf. And these are all ways that people can get involved. Yes, you know, we can pay a membership, which we do now pay a business membership. But, you know, we need people to come out and support the likes of Simply Living, because where else do we go to find like-minded people or learn?
Well, you guys were talking about engaging with the community, but Simply Living is a community unto itself. And that's something that has value to those people who are feeling like they're Martians, you know, on an alien planet. And every so often the Martians have to get together and speak Martianese, you know, I mean.
Or many, many, many languages. Well, one of the things that I wanted to hear from you about after I did my commercial is to say, you know, we're living in a interesting times, and that could be good or that could be bad. But what are the goals for reframing Simply Living as the pandemic and a new normal begins to emerge that doesn't look anything like the past normal? What are some ideas that you're tossing around or planning at this point?
Well, I think the one is definitely the Simply Living Sustainable You. And I love that because that you could be Y-O-U. And I think that's a good example of the information isn't changing? How do we just repackage it to meet how people can start understanding the language and seeing things? So I think the Sustainable You. And what that is a place for if things are going on in one calendar, to be able to find the things that are be going on, but also in a way to actually work with organizations to mount our own classes and work just like you had done in the past with Simply Living to revive that. So we are helping to mount classes, but we are also connecting people to the resources, all the great resources that are here now to get to be more sustainable. And I think the other part of it is the transformation, the hub, the,
The transition hub.
And to me, that's been really important because how do we get from here to there? So once people recognize they don't like that some things are going on and they agree with any, how do we give them a template, give them a little better path? And I think people are more open to it, but how do we break down the language so that they can see the errors in some of the greenwashing and they can see some of the errors that, you know, people say that they're doing a lot, but their actions aren't following through. Sustainable You is definitely one big one. You have others, Chuck?
Well, transition movement, transition town movement, started in England. It's an international movement. We're the transition hub in Central Ohio, formerly affiliated with the U.S. transition town movement, which, and they've just switched. Change their name to Eco Challenge. And I think ecochallenge.org, or they actually say it that way. And they do have some new approaches in addition to what they've been doing with the local. But the whole idea is, what can you do locally? We can't just wait for the corporations, we can't wait for the government to intervene and solve the problems that we have. We need to start right where we are. That could be a street level, a community level, a neighborhood, a big city like Columbus, et cetera. So all of those need to be seen as moving in the direction of all these areas, like the local food system needs to come from the bottom up. By the way, Ronnie Cummins is the author of Grassroots Rising, and we read that book in our Simply Living book club. And the actual subtitle is A Call to Action on Climate, Farming, Food, and a Green New Deal. So I think this is something, when Annie was talking about the economics of happiness, which I also met and got a hug from Helena Norberg, which was wonderful.
Definitely Annie, a rock. Got a picture.
I got a hug too.
Oh, you got a
hug. Yes, okay. I did.
Ooh, twofer.
But I think that this is something that we're trying to reframe Simply Living as, this is our time. I love it when you have the phrase, the end of the world as we know it. The end of the world as we know it, yeah, has to, the collapse of the global consumer economy and the loosening up and the localization. I love that Helena Norberg-Hodge now to speak, she started her website now is localfutures.org, and then Economics of Happiness is the kind of the subtitle or whatever for that website. And to me, what's exciting about that is they're saying localization is the antidote to the global consumer economy that is collapsing because it runs on fossil fuels, that has killed the created income inequality, it's destroying our ecosystems. So localization, this bottom-up change process is, I think, really the emphasis that we need to take now. So in fact, Helena Norberg-Hodge calls it big picture activism. Recognize that this big picture is the global consumer economy is collapsing. That's a good thing. We're going to be happier, as you've pointed out, once we actually live sustainably, rebuild our communities and connect with each other in a deeper way. This is a big change. This is a huge change. And it's something that to me is just totally exciting. And I'm so happy. I hope I live another 10 years so that I can see how this unfolds as we make this change. We'll see.
Well, one of the things that I'm interested in, which is the reason I asked the question, is that I think that this is a great time of opportunity. And even though there's a lot of pain and hurt and poverty and a lot of tough things to see, it's also a time of opportunity. And I feel like that the greatest thing that you guys do is that newsletter on Friday that gets sent out. It has so much information. It's well put together. Anything you could possibly want to know about what's happening, whether it's art or food or discussions or anarchy or any of those things, you can find that information. And I just wonder how you're going to go forward with that beyond just where it is, because it seems like there's a need for some kind of directory for Central Ohio that lets us know where should we be buying certain things that maybe companies get or businesses get a certification. So we know, let's go over there and spend our money. I think we have to bring these people out of the background in a positive way. And I see that newsletter as kind of a beginning of that.
We so agree, Annie. And I know you and I've had discussions about this. And it truly is something that Simply Living is trying to do, to create that directory. And also, because we have the tools for those individual businesses to work on ways for them to become sustainable, and also to try and find them customers who appreciate what they are doing, that is definitely part of the challenge of where we're trying to take sustainable, as you know, the sustainable you, as well as trying to create an online directory and starting with our own Central Ohio businesses.
Yeah, we're even thinking about taking it statewide and partnering with our statewide partners like the Ohio Ecological Food and Farming Association. They have members and the whole set of businesses that relate to the local food economy. Green Energy Ohio, as I know Jay has been on the board there, and they have members, and they have all these businesses statewide that are involved in green energy. ECDI, the Economic and Community Development Institute, is now moved into offices around the state. They do microloans for small businesses, and they allow people to invest in a special fund that helps local entrepreneurs get started and Main Street businesses thrive. So that's these partners and others locally, of course, and Lynn can speak to those too. We've been
okay. Well, Lynn won't be allowed to speak to those because we're actually running out of time. We could talk for hours and we probably will. But anyway, at this point, we want to thank you guys. You've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our guests from Simply Living, Lynn Stan and Chuck Lynn. Thanks a lot, you guys. And we also want to thank our Emmy award-winning and now Emmy-nominated producer, Adam Rich. We want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully probably told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and buy locally.
Buy locally. All right, till next time. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.